iHeart Podcasts.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So in reading up for today's episode, I stumbled into this story about the old trick of pulling a rabbit out of the hat.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, while there's some dispute over who first created that trick, it apparently debuted in the 1830s. And it goes all the way back to Mary Toft. Do you know Mary Toft?
I'm not sure I remember her. Was she a magician?
No, she was this legendary con artist from the 18th century. And she managed to trick doctors into believing she'd given birth to 16 live rabbits. Now, why she wanted to trick them into thinking she'd given birth to 16 rabbits, I'm not sure. But she managed to fool the doctors and even the royal family at the time. But part of the reason she was eventually discovered was that someone spotted her husband buying all these baby rabbits just on the sly. Anyway, once it was established that she was a fraud, magicians started parroting her trick. In fact, in early renditions, they wouldn't just pull one rabbit out of a hat, but a bunch of them.
Which is so weird that magicians still do that rabbit in a hat trick, right? Like, it's a staple.
I know, but that's actually just the first of 9 hat facts that we've got for you today. So let's dig in. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hattikader. And on the other side of the soundproof glass, wearing a wide-brimmed hat from the, what is that, the Hamburglar Collection?
I think it is.
That is impressive. That's our friend and producer, Tristan McNeil. And of course, we've got our pal and head researcher, Gabe Lousier, on the line with us as well. How's it going, Gabe?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's going well.
Well, because I kicked off today's episode, how about I throw it to you, Gabe, for your first fact?
Sure. All right. So a year before he was killed, President Lincoln had actually had another assassination attempt on his life. And this was in August of 1864. He was out riding a horse who happened to be named Old Abe also, by the way. And he was 3 miles away from the White House when someone took a pot shot at him. And the bullet just missed him, clipping his stovepipe hat off his head. And the two Abes took off. And when soldiers found the hat later on, they discovered that the bullet had gone right through the crown.
Wow.
Which, you know, it led everyone to believe that the lucky top hat had actually saved his life.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, that's a pretty crazy story. Okay, Mango, what's your first fact?
Well, you know, since Gabe had one about Lincoln, I actually have one of Lincoln's hat as well. And it's unfortunate that he wasn't wearing his lucky hat at the Ford Theater. And instead, it was sitting by his feet during that performance. But that hat actually has its own story. So after the assassination, Mary Todd Lincoln sent the president's hat to the Smithsonian, where there were strict orders not to exhibit the hat under any circumstance. And apparently they thought viewing the hat might induce too much hysteria in the public. Mm. So only a few people knew about it. And for 30 years, it was just hidden away in the basement of the Smithsonian before it was rediscovered. And of course, today it's considered one of the Smithsonian's most prized possessions.
Yeah. I'd love to do a tour one day of like the underground of the Smithsonian, not just because like what do you see in the movies, but there actually are just a ton of artifacts and things they don't show.
Drawers full of birds. It's just amazing.
I don't know where you came up with that.
No, it's true.
Drawers full of birds.
You haven't seen that photo? It's amazing.
No,
it's like this massive hall, and there are like a few curators who've just opened all the drawers, and it's like, I want to say hundreds of thousands of birds, like just stuffed into drawers.
Hopefully dead, I'm assuming. Well, I did not know about that. We're going to have to do an episode. I just didn't expect that to be the response. Like, all these things underground, you're like, drawers full of birds.
Yeah.
All right, well, back to the hats. I've actually got a weird one here. So have you guys ever heard of the Straw Hat Riots?
I haven't.
Well, apparently on September 15th, it used to be a big day for the hatting community known as Felt Hat Day. And it's when men switched over from wearing summer straw hats for winter ones. And actually, if you wore a hat after that date, you were basically asking to get made fun of.
Mm.
In fact, for a while, young hooligans in New York City would use sticks and nails at the end to fish these straw hats off, you know, passersby that had them on. And then they would stomp them flat. Like really, really nice kids. But in 1922, this Felt Hat Day hooliganism got out of hand. And so many boys were out there stomping these hats that the police were called in. There was a subhead in the New York Tribune that read, quote, "Many youthful marauders are arrested and 7 are spanked by irate parents at station." I like that they counted the number of them who were spanked. Anyway, I think it's safe to say that they learned their lesson from this event. All right, Mango, what do you got next?
So this is just something I found that I thought was funny. So in honor of George Orwell's 110th birthday, these two Dutch artists in the city of Utrecht decided to celebrate his 1984 legacy by putting little party hats on all the city's surveillance cameras. And it's really funny. You should look these pictures up because all these sort of like Big Brother lenses around the town are all dressed up in these super festive party hats.
Oh, wow.
And the whole thing made the cameras look ridiculous, but it actually drew attention and it made people realize how much they're actually being constantly watched.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool. All right. Actually, you know what? There was another fact. I know we need to get back to Gabe for another fact, but I meant to mention this one after you talked about Lincoln's hat. I know we talked about Lincoln's lost hat, but apparently Jackie Kennedy's iconic pillbox hat has also gone missing. So while her pink suit is in a vault in Maryland, it supposedly won't be shown for 100 years, but her matching hat is nowhere to be found. Some hat conspiracy theorists think that Jackie O's personal secretary, Mary Gallagher, that she's to blame.
Huh.
She was the last one seen holding it, and they think she might have sold it in an online auction to, you know, some fancy hat collector or something like that.
Just put it on eBay.
Yeah, you just never know, but Mary's been spotted putting Kennedy memorabilia up for auction before, actually. So this could actually be the case, but she's refused to discuss the matter.
That's crazy.
All right, Gabe, I feel like Mango and I were hogging it for a minute. We want to come back to you. You got another hat fact for us?
Yeah, here's a quick one, actually. And that's that Daniel Boone didn't actually wear a coonskin cap.
Hmm.
So most of the time he wore a beaver hat. And in fact, that's where the whole thing started. So when an artist named Chester Harding painted Boone, he painted him in an accurate beaver hat. But then when the prints of that painting were sold, they hired a Daniel Boone impersonator to hawk those prints. And unfortunately, the impersonator, you know, couldn't afford a beaver hat, or maybe he just couldn't find one. But either way, he showed up to sell in a lesser coonskin hat. And for some reason, imagery just stuck.
Do you feel like you could spot the difference between a beaver hat and a coonskin hat?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You
got that
away.
One down. Okay. All right. Well, actually, I've got a cool fact about Carmen Miranda, you know, the Brazilian singer and dancer who was popular in the 30s and 40s. Well, she was iconic partly because she wore that giant fruit hat on her head, which inspired the Chiquita Banana Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what's interesting. So she actually used to make these elaborate hats herself. She'd worked as a milliner in her youth in a hat shop, and so she knew the art. And she modeled those crazy fruit hats on the girls in Brazilian villages who used to carry the baskets of fruit on their heads to market.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
All right, Mango, what's your last fact?
So, you know what's the opposite of making an iconic hat yourself? Is a shoplifting one. But that's what Slash, the bad boy guitarist of Guns N' Roses, did. So this is well before they had a record deal. Slash was looking for something fancy to wear at a thrift store. And because he claims he didn't have the money at the time, I mean, this is how he justifies it. He found a top hat and then just walked out of the store with it. And he was lucky that no one chased him out. But, of course, that's not the only part of his outfit that he filched. Since the top hat looked too plain on its own, he actually stole a belt that he used as a hat band. And so, I mean, of course, the fact that he's so happy to talk about all this stealing without feeling any guilt kind of gives a little more credence to this amazing theory I saw online that Guns N' Roses ripped off their song Sweet Child of Mine from an Australian band called Australian Crawl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the song was out like 5 years before, and apparently, I mean, they say that Guns N' Roses was listening to like Australian rock at the time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy if you listen to the song.
I have to go back and listen to that right after I look at the birds in the drawers. Okay, Gabe, you got one more fact for us?
Yeah, so this is a slightly sweeter one than that. But have you heard before that the 100 pleats on a French chef's hat, that they represent all the different ways they know of how to prepare an egg?
I wasn't familiar with that.
Yeah, well, it's an often repeated story, but it's actually hard to find any evidence of this. I mean, French cooks like Jacques Pepin will tell you how much they love eggs and even use making perfect silky scrambled eggs as kind of this test of whether you can work in their kitchens. But Bon Appetit did some digging and they did find a little bit of corroborating evidence for this. So apparently the French cook who elevated French cuisine and kind of put chefs in uniform, Auguste Escoffier, he had 143 recipes for mastering eggs, and he documented them all in his legendary 1903 cookbook.
I feel like I could come up with maybe 4 ways to cook eggs. I mean, I love eggs, so that is impressive. And I want to give you today's fact off trophy, but I really feel like the whole birds and drawers came out of nowhere. And so, Gabe, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like we have no choice but to give Mango the trophy today. What do you think?
I can get behind that.
You okay with that, Mango?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to stuff it in a drawer.
But listeners, we've loved hearing from you guys. So many ideas for future Nine Things episodes. So if you want to keep those coming, we would love to hear from you. It's parttimegenius@howstuffworks.com. You can also call our 24/7 fact hotline, 1-844-PT-GENIUS, or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be back with a full-length episode tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening.